You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Green Left Weekly Radio.
There's one newspaper that is independent of powerful capitalist interests, and that is Green Left Weekly.
It's the people's voice, committed to human and civil rights, ecological sustainability, democracy and equality. It presents ideas that the mainstream media won't.
Green Left is a leading source of local, national and international news with analysis, discussion and debate to strengthen the anti-capitalist movement.
It helps expose the lies of the capitalist press and puts the voices of the marginalised and the oppressed at the centre of fighting for a better world and helps us understand the political developments unfolding around us.
Good morning, listeners. You are listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, being broadcasted to you from 3CR Community Radio.
Good morning, listeners. Chloe here on the line as well. 3CR and Green Left recognise that this show is being broadcasted on the Wurundjeri land of the Kulin Nation. This land was never ceded, it was taken by force, and we pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. The struggle for First Nation sovereignty is deeply connected with the struggles against racism, imperialism and capitalism. And as socialists, we pledge to actively fight for decolonisation and against all the manifestations of that, such as children being stolen from their parents and communities, the poverty gap, the debts in custody. And we stand with First Nations people for justice, sovereignty and land rights.
Okay, so just to kind of announce what we have coming up on our program. So we have a pretty packed program this week with some great interviews lined up. So we are going to be speaking to Sue Bolton, Marybeck councillor and Socialist Alliance member, who recently published an article about 10 steps Labor could take to address the war on Iran, Lebanon and Palestine. Then at 7:45 a.m. we're going to be interviewing Ash Watt, who is an early childcare worker and also supporter of the Members First ticket for the United Workers Union. Then we'll be speaking to Fatima Yazbek, who is a human rights advocate and member of the Gulf Institute for Democracy and Human Rights, and also part of the Lebanese community. So we're going to be speaking to her about, the situation that's sort of happening in Lebanon. And just a bit of a quick report there. I mean, I was made aware this morning that Lebanon and Israel have entered into a 10-day ceasefire. Which obviously is, I mean, we obviously want the war to end, but I mean, this is obviously a welcome respite for the people living in southern Lebanon who have been under constant bombing by Israel. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see kind of what kind of happens next. And more disturbingly is the fact that, you know, Hezbollah were not involved in any of the kind of negotiations. Which I think is outrageous in a lot of ways, given the fact that Hezbollah has been used as the kind of scapegoat for why Israel is invading South Lebanon. But also the reality is the entire goal of Israel bombing South Lebanon is part of their settler colonial project of, you know, forcibly taking over parts of Lebanon. And I give all the kind of solidarity to people in Lebanon, especially those who are resisting Israel's onslaught. But we'll be talking obviously later on with Fatima about the kind of politics kind of there. And I guess we want to kind of have a bit of a headline discussion about the recent speech by Angus Taylor, who is now the opposition leader for the Liberal Party. And of course, he outlined a kind of proposed kind of overhaul of Australia's migration system on Tuesday, which includes things such as tougher enforcement measures and screening of people who come to Australia. Chloe, did you want to sort of start off with some comments about it?
Well, clearly this is also, you know, part of One Nation's agenda in dividing us. I mean, they're not bringing people together. They're dividing us, the working class, through things like racism, sexism, homophobia and transphobia. But Taylor has made some ridiculous remarks about, you know, vowing to deport 65,000 visa overstayers if he's elected, warning that overseas students and asylum seekers are exploiting the system. I think he's got that backwards. It's the other way around. The system exploits them, and international students fund our universities by paying upfront full fee. And many of the students are from European countries. So, I mean, there's so much to say on this, but Palestinians should be welcomed here. Any refugee fleeing should be welcomed here. And Australia participates and supports the wars that creates a situation where people have to flee. And when they try to seek safety here, the Australian government shuts their borders, calling them a security risk. Taylor has also singled out Palestinian refugees from Gaza as a national security risk, and it's a deliberate sort of thing. I mean, the solution of ruling parties is to trap people on things like, you know, in places like Nauru, spend millions of dollars criminalizing and dehumanizing refugees, demeaning Palestinians, when it would actually cost less money to not do those things. It would cost less money to open up the borders and welcome them here. So it is a deliberate political act to punish people for seeking refuge, and anyone who wishes to migrate here for a better life should be able to do that. And we oppose borders and racist border imperialism here at Green Left. When, you know, capital is able to pass through borders unopposed, and millions of tourists pass in and out of this country whenever they want, and it's not an issue as long as they're from imperialist countries like the US, Canada or Britain. I guess, is this part of Australian values that Taylor is claiming, that we accept the most, that we accept that the most vulnerable people on the planet are treated this way? And what is the point in claiming values such as equity and justice and non-discrimination when they can easily be violated?
I think there's also a few other things kind of going on that are kind of tied into Angus Taylor's announcement. And it's linked into kind of the kind of broader context of this growth for populist far-right kind of ideas, especially with the growth of One Nation. And in fact, the Liberal Party is very much feeling incredibly threatened by the rise of One Nation, because One Nation are kind of growing in the polls, promoting kind of this, you know, very kind of racist sort of anti-immigration sort of rhetoric. But I think there's also a number of other things as well. Like, the fact is they're trying to introduce things like screening of migrants based on their social media history, which is something taken from the Donald Trump kind of playbook. I also think there's this question that has to be raised about, you know, what exactly are Australian values? Because Australia kind of like often kind of praises itself as being this sort of liberal democracy where you can, you know, be whoever you want, etc. But then they have this constant sort of reference to Australian values, and then it's like, oh yeah, you know, if you don't fit within those Australian values, you know, well, we have a right to deport you. And they all even promote this idea that you have to be patriotic about this country. You have to want to, you know, give you know, you have to help. You have to help advance Australia and so on. But I think it's all quite ridiculous and a bit silly. But I do think that the rhetoric that Angus Taylor is promoting is not necessarily silly, though, because it is incredibly harmful. It is openly kind of promoting racism, is openly dividing working class kind of people. But also, I think something has to be said, that while the Labor government, you know, the Labor Party has come out and condemned this rhetoric, you know, we can't be ignorant to the fact that, well, the Labor Party has, in a sense, opened the door to a lot of this as well. While they've been in government, you know, they the government has implemented a lot of the kind of worst sort of legislation when it comes to their when it comes to treatment of migrants, including things like character tests. They've implemented things that you know, give asylum seekers less kind of rights. They've bought into this sort of rhetoric that that, you know, they have a right to deny people sort of to sort of visas for political reasons and so on. So really, when the Labor Party kind of opposes this, I don't think they're necessarily being genuine, because in a sense they've catered to the populist right on a lot of their policies that they've implemented in terms of migration. The other issue with the Labor Party is, the Labor Party are only tackling this issue on purely an economic basis, because the reality is, you know, they're basically trying to say that, oh, well, you can't possibly criticise, you know, we can't block immigration because we need migration for jobs. So basically implying that, you know, the only reason that we would support people coming to migrating to Australia is if they bring an economic kind of value to the country. I mean, but the reality is, I mean, under a capitalist system, you know, someone who migrates to Australia is always there's always going to be some kind of economic value being brought. We're all engineered to consume at some point. We all have to sell our labour at some point. So this idea that someone can just come into Australia and just go live off all the benefits, I think is a bit ridiculous, given that we live in a capitalist system where people are forced to sell their labour. But ultimately, when the government talks about, you know, when governments sort of legitimise borders, etc., in reality, capitalism is a system that, you know, relies a lot on migration. But the idea that you could give everyone who comes here equal rights is fundamentally not in the interest of capitalism. Because the ideal world for capitalists is, they probably would all like us to be on temporary visas. That would be the dream for a lot of capitalist nations. And you can think about, like, you know, the nature of the Gulf states, where, you know, Gulf states rely heavily on labor of temporary of people on temporary visas, and of course, because of that they're able to exploit workers to the highest kind of degree. Yeah, in reality, the Australian government, or most capitalist governments, would ideally want to get away with that kind of system, so they can be as exploitative as they possibly can. And the other thing is also in the capitalist interest to make things like citizenship and permanent residence conditional, because, you know, the idea that someone can just come here, build a life here, you know, they have to basically prove that they deserve to be here, etc. And that is just another way of how the capitalist system divides workers. But yeah, I think I think a lot of questions has to be raised about this question of Australian values. And yeah, we have to think the left has to come out and condemn this rhetoric, but also we have to build anti-racist campaigns that oppose this racism, because down the track, the reality is, one of the biggest sort of lies that that, you know, ordinary working people are getting sucked into is this idea that immigration is linked to the housing crisis. And every government, every political party, with the exception of the left, has legitimised those arguments, including the Labor Party. And in fact, the Labor Party has often tried to say, "Oh, well, this is actually a legitimate debate." And yeah, we're also serious about keeping migration to sustainable levels.
It's a great way to absolve yourself or not take accountability for the housing crisis by blaming immigration. But First Nations people and Australia's early migrants fought hard for equal rights, and people who participated in the civil rights struggle worldwide resisted and played an important role in ending the White Australia policy. But elements of the White Australia policy still linger. And it is good to see backlash against Taylor for his racism, but the criticisms don't go far enough, because the ones, well, you know, even the Labour Party, who has come out making some criticisms, they are hypocrites, because there is bipartisan cruelty when it comes to refugee policy. They are responsible for inhumane acts against refugees, and they're responsible for introducing things like mandatory and indefinite detention for people seeking refuge. So we need to call both major parties out, and we need to keep building the anti-racism campaign, and keep standing with Palestinians, and not let them continue to be demonized and thought of as a security risk.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder if we should probably wrap up this kind of discussion, and maybe it's actually time to play a bit of a song and a few kind of announcements. You're listening to Green Left Radio.
Because the Palestinian fight isn't just the Palestinians' fight, it's all our fight, because it's a fight not just about land, it's about a fight for freedom.
Everybody should be standing here today saying, free Palestine.
Solidarity with our Palestinian brothers and sisters on behalf of the Gumbanja Nation, my people who've never ceded their sovereignty.
We should be recognising Palestine as a state and recognising the rights of Palestinians.
3CR, stay tuned, stay radical.
You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR. We're going to play a song for listeners this morning. It's by artist Southside Kings, and the track is called For My People, part featuring Dara and Big Luke from their album Straight Outta Shepparton. And I want to thank Matt Ward, who's a columnist in Green Left, writes a music column. The latest one is called 10 New Albums for a World at War. And he mentions here that in a speech to Australia's Parliament on March 5th, Canada's Prime Minister warned of AI stealing creators' work. The next day, APRA, AMCOS and SOCAN, which represent musicians across Australia and Canada, said this is one dimension of this challenge that is uniquely shared between our two nations, the protection of Indigenous cultural intellectual property. The same day, a funeral was held for Aboriginal poet Lionel Fogarty. 12 days later, Fogarty's modern-day equivalents, Indigenous rappers Southside Kings, released this album on the streaming services. Its raw, idiosyncratic, soulful sound is the antidote to the generic-sounding AI slop now swamping such platforms and eating into artists' income at the rate of more than 60,000 uploads a day. That's why I'm going to play this track, For My People, by Dara and, or featuring Dara and Big Luke. I'm going to play it from Boom Play. Hopefully it's going to work.
For all my people out there struggling, one time for all those grinding and hustling, one time for all my people working 9 to 5, one time for all my people trying to stay alive, one time for all my people on welfare, and one time for all my ladies with the real hair. Just a little something, let you know we feel y'all, and we still here keeping it real,
for
y'all.
For my people out there hustling and getting that dough, for my people working 9 to 5, this is for y'all. You gotta keep your head up and keep doing your thing. You gotta fight through that shit like you're in that boxing ring. Struggle easy, stand hard, and take the time to breathe. You take some real hard hits and do that shit with ease. It's the fight they call life, it's the fight that someday ends, and it's the way you fight. This fight determines how your life ends. Life ends.
One time for all my people out there struggling. One time for all those grinding and hustling. One time for all my people working 9 to 5. One time for all my people trying to stay alive. One time for all my people on welfare. And one time for all my ladies with their real hair. Just a little something, let you know we feel y'all. And we still here, keeping it real, y'all.
I love my people, put it down for the cause. I stand for my side and I ride for my star. I came from the bottom, so I'm keeping it raw. And I fight for my family, never scared of the law. Hold it down for my block, put on for my city. Never back down, if you want it, come and get me. Double SK, shut down your committee. And I'm up for revolution like my people's in the six, in the six.
One time for all my people out there struggling. One time for all those grinding and hustling. One time for all my people working 9 to 5. One time for all my people trying to stay alive. One time for all my people on welfare. And one time for all my ladies with their real hair. Just a little something, let you know we feel y'all. And we still here, keeping it real,
will
y'all.
Will it be the way you want and did you walk your own path? Or did you take some wrong turns and get caught up in the past? Don't even worry about that shit. The man upstairs is on the job. There's only one set of prints, and they're made by God. So my people out there doing it hard, push on through. It might feel like you're walking on flames with no shoes. It might feel like you got nothing, there ain't no clue. But this song right here, babes, this is for you. This is for you.
One time for all my people out there struggling. One time for all those grinding and hustling. One time for all my people working 9 to 5. One time for all my people trying to stay alive. One time for all my people on welfare. And one time for all my ladies with their real hair. Just a little something, let you know we feel y'all. And we still here, keeping it real, y'all.
I do it for my people. The everyday struggle is all my sisters and brothers who had to learn to get the hustle up. Single mothers and kids in this cold world coming up. Keep your head up high, cause it ain't no stopping us. You shine marvelous through hard times, keeping strong. The whole world against us, but you keep on keeping on. My people beautiful, reflecting the light. When them clouds in the sky, we stay shining so bright, so bright.
One time for all my people out there struggling. One time for all those grinding and hustling. One time for all my people working 9 to 5. One time for all my people trying to stay alive. One time for all my people on welfare. And one time for all my ladies with their real hair. Just a little something, let you know we feel y'all. And we still here, keeping it real, y'all.
Welcome back to Green Left. You just heard a track by Southside Kings featuring Dara and Big Luke. And that was their track For My People Part 2 from their album Straight Out of Shepparton.
Oh, yeah. So we're very happy to be joined today by Berrybeck Councillor Sue Bolton, who is a member of Socialist Alliance, and just recently published an article for the for Green Left titled 10 Steps Labor Could Take to Address the War on Iran, Lebanon and Palestine. So good morning, Sue.
Hi, how's it going?
So Sue, I kind of want to start off this interview by hearing your comments about how, what is your assessment of how the Albanese government has responded to the gas crisis, and in fact, many people were watching with bated breath just 16 days ago. Anthony Albanese's a rare address to the nation on April 1, where we're kind of hoping for some kind of big sort of major announcement, but it turned out to be absolutely nothing. Yeah, I want to kind of hear your comments on really how is the, what do you think the, how do you think the Albanese government is addressing this?
Well, probably firstly, before talking about the gas crisis, it would be good to say that the Anthony Albanese government has been absolutely pathetic about the war in Iran, a war which was just initiated and where the aggressors are the United States and Israel. And really, the gas crisis could be solved overnight, really, with US and Israel ending this war forever, not making undue demands on Iran or on Hezbollah, and paying reparations to these two countries, not to mention the fact that Israel is still bombing Gaza on a daily basis while this is all happening. I think that's sort of got to be the basic first thing that they do before looking at measures that might be taken inside Australia. And the US could actually Australia could take some significant action to try to stop the war or put pressure on the US to stop the war, because the US can stop the war anytime it likes. And one of those would be to deny the use of its Australian bases to Pine Gap, its Pine Gap surveillance base, which is used in Middle East wars, was used in the war in Afghanistan, and Australia should be immediately withdrawing any military personnel who are on secondment to the US Army and Navy, and should also be withdrawing its military plane and any military planes and military personnel from the Middle East. And it needs to break the military alliance with the United States. That's really what's driving or partly driving all of this. So those are like some preconditions. You can't really solve the gas crisis or the fuel crisis in Australia or around the world without really dealing with the US military and breaking ties with the US military, and for that matter, the Israeli military as well.
Yeah, and I completely agree with that, Sue. And I guess but I also think one of the things about this whole crisis that's been caused by this war is that it's raising kind of a lot of political questions that the capitalist class is unwilling to address. Because the reality is there is an element where there is a lot more pressure on the United States and Israel to end this war on Iran. But one of the reasons isn't because of any kind of, like, even from the Australian government. Like, the Australian government is also, there was an interesting interview with Penny Wong on the 7:30 report where, you know, following the ceasefire that happened recently, well, the fake ceasefire, Penny Wong was sort of trying to give this sort of double speak where she was basically saying, oh, you know, on the other hand, you know, the Australian government is committed to peace, you know, we don't want any de-escalation, but at the same time, they were, in a sense, giving support to the military aims of the United States. So we're saying, yeah, well, we supported their military aims, but we just think they need to wind up now. And the reason why that they're arguing that we need to wind up now is they want everything to go back to normal because, you know, the blockading of the Strait of Hormuz has basically put the global economy into kind of disarray. And I guess what questions does that raise about the capitalist system and its reliance on fossil fuels, but also its reliance on this kind of global kind of market economy that where capital is constantly has to accumulate at any cost, even to the environment and to workers' well-being?
Well, I think it goes to this question of the role that fossil fuel and fossil fuel companies play in the world economy, which isn't just about petrol, because fossil fuel is used for the manufacture of plastics. So that plumbing supplies, as soon as the Iran war happened, plumbing supplies leapt by 35%. Now, these were plumbing supplies that were created before the war, so they weren't affected by the war, but they immediately jacked up all the prices because plumbing supplies are, like pipes and so forth now, are made with a form of plastic which involves oil. And so the oil companies are at the heart of the world economy, and they're also the reason why the world has not taken serious action on climate change, and they're also the reason why they have over many decades now, not just recent decades, but many decades, have pushed their parties in power, which in Australia are all three of the major parties, although some of them are not so major anymore, to not do any research into renewable energy and try and block at every turn any kind of shift to renewable energy or looking for other products, other materials that are not based on being byproducts of the oil industry. So these companies have enormous power and they have their politicians in place and they have their scientists in place, just like there were scientists in the employ of Big Tobacco. The oil industry has their scientists in the heart of Big Oil, and they are and there is a crossover between some of these companies and military companies, weapons companies, and other companies involved in the military industrial complex. And there's a little badge which was produced during not the Iraq War, during the in 2003. But in during the Gulf War, when the US invaded early 90s, saying no blood for oil. And in reality, what that invasion was all about was over who controlled the oil field, which companies. And really, out of that invasion of Iraq in the early 90s, the US managed to take control of the oil fields away from their European competitors. That's really what happened in Iraq, what the US got out of that invasion. And so we actually, and there's been very little discussion in Australia in response to this fuel crisis about shift to renewables, hastening the shift to renewables, providing the infrastructure for people to move to renewables. Only two states have experimented with free public transport, but public transport needs to be dramatically extended in order to make it a realistic option for lots of working class people to be able to get to work or get to do what they need to do. And that shift in terms of climate is so obvious, and yet there's very little discussion about that.
Keith, I want to kind of hear your kind of comments as well. I mean, is I guess in terms of like what are the kind of next steps that we need to kind of take to kind of end this war, especially in terms of building a movement to put pressure on the Labor government, but also governments all around the world?
Well, just before I answer that, I forgot to say in terms of the fossil fuel industry, I think we need to end all of these subsidies to the fossil fuel companies. They get enormous subsidies from federal and state governments. And there needs to be a proper tax on the mining industry, with the money being invested in renewables. That's really critical. And also, the energy industry needs to be in public hands. Those are some things, as well as the expansion of free public transport to be continued permanently, but an extension of public transport. Those are just some things, not the only things, but some things. In terms of ending the war, I think Australia needs to break its military alliance with the United States. And the centrepiece of that alliance, but not the only part of that alliance, is this AUKUS military agreement. Australia needs to get out of this. Australia needs to stop being part of the US military alliance. What purpose does it serve Australia? It just means that Australia is drawn more and more into the US wars. It's already been willingly part of too many wars which have caused devastation for hundreds of thousands of people in Iraq and other in Afghanistan and other places. We need to break that alliance, and we need to kick out all US bases in Australia, in particular Pine Gap, but other US bases in Australia. We need to break that AUKUS alliance. And we also need to break all ties with the Israeli military machine as well by cancelling all Israeli arms contracts and suspend any other arms agreements or defence agreements with Israel. We could also do things like kicking out the US and Israeli ambassadors. And we also need to push for US and Israel to pay reparations to all of these countries they've been marching around and bombing. What the US wants to do is eventually they do want an agreement to end the war, but they want it all to be on their terms. And that shouldn't be the case. US and Israel want to be able to dictate terms for every other government. They want to turn other states into failed states. They do not want to liberate anybody, and they're not able to liberate anybody because they're fundamentally undemocratic, militaristic societies. And so, we also need to call for reparations because they've done huge damage to people and cause huge death and destruction to people in Lebanon, Iran, Palestine. Like, they shouldn't be allowed to just get away with this scot-free. They should be forced to pay a price for all of this death and destruction they're causing around the world. And we do need to try and stop the United States, because we also know that US imperialism won't stop at one country. Or, the US is planning to march on and attack Cuba. They've already attacked Venezuela. They want a submissive world, and that's also what Israel wants throughout the Middle East. They think they've got a right to just bomb any country they choose in the Middle East without any repercussions. And we've got to take strong action to stop that, or try and stop that. And there are all sorts of sanctions Australia could carry out against Israel and the US to help stop these two military machines.
All right. Well, thanks for that, Sue. And I guess I want to kind of hear if you have any kind of final comments to make, especially on the recent announcement, which predates your article from Richard Miles, the Minister for War, basically talking about the increase for military spending and how you would respond to this sort of propaganda argument that's being posed, that we have to increase our defence spending because the world is so uncertain and, with all these global conflicts.
Well, I'd react by saying, who's making the world more uncertain? It's the United States that's making the world more uncertain through launching these military attacks on other countries, whether it be Iran or Venezuela, or bombing of boats in the Caribbean, judge, jury, and executioner. Like, they've killed hundreds of people in the Caribbean in these little boats. You'd be, have you hardened your mouth if you're were involved in the fishing industry, going out in the Caribbean to fish. The US bombed a dairy farm the other day in Ecuador. The US is the one that's creating an uncertain world. And the people who would have suffered, like outside of the Middle East, who would have suffered from this war, would be much more people in global South countries like Philippines and so forth. I mean, we might think we've got it bad in Australia with the increasing prices of everything as a result of the war in Iran. But this has caused much more havoc to global South countries and humanitarian efforts in different countries as well, where there might be famine suffering or civil wars, as in Sudan and places like that. So it's the US that is making the world unsafe, and Australia should be spending its money on not on military, which will make the world even more unsafe, and not on their alliance with the US. They need to pull out of that alliance and focus on international solidarity and support for global South countries, and as well as support for people in Australia.
Well, thank you very much, Sue, for being on our program this week. I think this has been a very kind of important discussion. And yeah, I'll also just like to make a note to our listeners to get along to the Palestine rally this Sunday at 12 p.m. on Palestine Prisoners Day. And also keep up to date by following Green Left for any updates on the latest protests and public discussions and events against the war in Iran.
Thanks very much.
Thanks again, Sue. Bye.
We have a right to be in public space, undertaking political activity. That is not something that people should be telling us that we can't do.
Multiple actions rolling over months and years and create huge sustained pressure of social change.
And what we're seeing around the country right now is increasing repression of protest.
Protest works. That's why I think we're seeing it criminalised all over the place.
3CR. Stay tuned, stay radical.
You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR. We're going to go to another track, Mum Does the Washing by Joshua Idehen, from the album Know You're Hurting, Everyone Is Hurting, Everyone Is Trying, You Have Got to Try. It's also another one from Matt Ward's music column in Green Left, 10 New Albums for a World at War. And in it, he's saying, mocking such misogyny is the new album by British-born Nigerian spoken word artist Joshua Idehen, released on March 6th on Mum Does the Washing, which parodies its pervasiveness in all politics over a driving house beat. Hope you enjoy.
Some people have no respect, the audacity. Life is very simple. A couple of easy rules to follow. Love thy neighbor. Respect your mother, you know, Bible thing. It's not that hard to understand. Hey, mother! I love you and that. Carried me in your womb for 9 months, clothed me, bathed me, fed me, but that's a silk shirt. Hand wash only. Get with the program, please.
The world, according to your mom, doing the washing. Capitalism, your mom does the washing. You pay her a dollar. You get her to do your mate's washing. Your mate pays you $50. Communism, your mom does the washing. You do the washing. Every night you salute a picture of your dad. Socialism, your mom does the washing. You do the cooking. Everybody is happy. In theory, feudalism, your mom does the washing and pays you tax. Colonialism, you barge into your mom's room, claim you discovered your mom's room, dump all your dirty clothes on the floor. Fascism, your mom does the washing and you are obsessed with her nose. Liberalism, you watch your mom do the washing and you feel really, really bad. Something must be done, you say. Something may or may not get done. Libertarianism. Your mom does the washing. You believe you did the washing. Religion. Your mom does the washing. You thank God. Atheism. Your mom does the washing. You make a 12-part YouTube video demanding peer-reviewed evidence that she did, in fact, do the washing. Zionism. You shoved your mom into the washing machine, and the spinning made her dizzy, and that dizziness made her vomit, and you point to that vomit and call it anti-Semitism. Americanism. Your mom does the washing. It's in the Constitution. End of discussion. Mansplaining. Your mom does the washing. You tell her how best to do the washing. You have never done the washing. Same-sex marriage. Your moms do the washing. Patriarchy. Your mom doesn't exist. The washing is mysteriously done. Turfism. Your mom doesn't want your other mom doing the washing because of, like, genitals and stuff. Polling. There's a 70% chance you do the washing on Saturday night. Come Sunday morning, it was 100% done by your mom. Africanism. You go to Benny's house. Benny's mom does the washing. You ask your mom why she doesn't do the washing. You do not survive the night. Feminism. Your mom insists you grow up and do your own washing. White feminism. Your mom hired a woman of color to do the washing.
If you kick every Latino out of this country, then who is going to be cleaning your toilet, Donald Trump?
Male feminism. That one time I did the washing, I told everybody I did the washing. I blogged about it, bragged about it, took a selfie, Insta story, went on TV, won an Oscar, went on Fortnite, did a dance. I am an ally. Hashtag me too. Egalitarianism. That one time you did the washing is proof it's all equal. No one needs feminism anymore. Hip hop. Every day I'm hustling. Every day I'm hustling. When I bring the basket, mama puts the washing in. Narcissism. You look good in the clothes your mom washed. Surrealism. The washing does your mom.
All right. You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. So we're very happy to be joined today by Ash Watt, who is an early childcare worker, member of the United Workers Union, and is also a supporter of Members First. So good morning, Ash.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Well, to kind of start off the interview, one of the reasons that we wanted to kind of do this interview was to kind of profile the kind of Members kind of First kind of campaign, but also to actually also get a sense of the kind of different industries that are being represented by United Workers Union. And, you know, as an early childcare worker, can you tell us about what are some of the industrial issues that are kind of affecting childcare workers right now?
Well, I think the major one is our chronically low pay. I think our early childhood workers are one of the bottom, one of the lowest paid professions in the country. And it's been that way for a really long time. And that coupled with our really full-on working conditions. So early childhood workers work really long hours during the day. It's obviously very physically and emotionally taxing, and it's really regulated workspace as well. So as, you know, different regulations come in, we have extra work to do, but that's not reflected within our pay. And just working in a sector that sort of clearly isn't respected by the government, and by our society, I think by the families, but, yeah. It's really reflected in our pay and working conditions.
And what can you tell us about some of the demands that childcare workers have for the industry? And maybe even kind of what has been your assessment of, I guess, some of the campaigns that United Workers Union has been part of up to this point in terms of fighting for childcare workers?
Yeah, so we ran a big campaign where we were asking for a 25% pay increase, which I actually think was quite a modest ask considering where we sort of sit in the pay rate. So far, we've had a 15% increase from the government, which, you know, is good, but just not enough. We're sort of asking as well for better ratios with adults to children on the floor. But, yes, so we're sort of only part of the way so far. We're trying to get more commitment from the government to enshrine that already 15% and hopefully get that extra 10% funded, yeah.
Yeah. And just before I go into the kind of question around members kind of first, kind of just want to hear about some of your comments as a childcare worker about, I guess, one of the big elephants in the room when it comes to childcare. And this has been something that has been, you know, starting to be spoken about a bit more in the mainstream media, especially with some of the horrible kind of scandals that has happened in childcare. Yeah. And want to kind of hear about your comments on, you know, the issues of privatisation of childcare.
Yes. Well, I think those scandals really kind of highlight just how, just how extreme, I suppose, the outcomes can be. Like, this is obviously about staff well-being and respect for staff, but also this completely impacts children, and children's safety is at risk. So I guess with members first and some of the issues we've seen with the union, or why I'm voting members first, is I feel like we've missed some really key moments of action. I think childcare workers actually hold quite a potential for power and for getting what we want. We are an essential service. We saw that through COVID. But our union doesn't want to kind of push for, I guess, actual industrial action. You know, we've sort of done a few stunts, you know, sending postcards. We did a walk-off, which was really great and got a lot of media attention, but we're not really supported to actually take action that will push the government to act urgently, because it is urgent. Children's welfare is at stake. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, going into the kind of final kind of question, obviously, you mentioned a bit why you are supporting kind of Members First, but I guess I want to kind of hear a bit more about Members First, but also as an early childcare worker, you know, give me some of the reasons why, you know, make the case to, especially to any early childcare workers who might be listening to the program or might be listening back to the podcast and are members of United Work or any, or just in general, any members of United Workers Union, you know, why are you supporting Members First and why should other people support it?
Yeah, so Members First are pushing for a union that's transparent, democratic and member-led. There have been some things that have happened within the United Workers Union that we haven't been happy with, just such as decisions being made without consulting members, meeting minutes not being released to members. So Members First will strive to make things more democratic, more transparent, actually consulting members and I guess as well not engaging in the sort of dance with the Labor Party and trying to appease them as well. So actually fighting for the workers, and it will be run by workers as well.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Ash. And actually just a reminder just for our listeners, can you just let us know, when are the elections going to be taking place for the United Workers Union?
Yes, so ballots go out, I'm pretty sure it's April 27th. So they'll be mailed to people's home addresses. And so if you are a United Workers Union member, you can vote Members First above the line. Yeah, that would be great. So, yeah, I think just after next week, the ballots will be out in mailboxes.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Ash. And yeah, just for our listeners, you can get more information on Members First by going on their website on, I think it's membersfirstunion.org. So yeah, many listeners who are members of the United Workers Union, or if you know any any friends or family members who are also members of the United Workers Union, or even early childcare educators, definitely get them informed about Members First.
Yes, I think it's a really exciting opportunity.
All right, thanks again, Ash, for being on our program. And all the solidarity from one childcare worker to another.
Yeah, thank you so much, and right back at you.
You're listening to 3CR, an apartheid-free zone. 3CR's Committee of Management has passed a declaration formalising our commitment to a free Palestine. As an apartheid-free zone, we're committed to boycotting Israel's regime of oppression. We stand firmly against apartheid in Palestine and encourage other organisations to join us in this struggle. Visit our website to read the full declaration and learn more about our commitment to justice and liberation for Palestine and the Apartheid Free Zone movement.
You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, and Jacob and I were just going to make a little bit of a plug for Green Left. And yeah, I guess I just wanted to start off by just pointing out the obvious, that the gas industry is making so much money right now, record-breaking profits, because war makes a lot of money if you are the exploiter and not the exploited. And the Australian Prime Minister is travelling to countries like Singapore and Malaysia trying to secure fuel supplies, but there are much better ways around this. And I was reading from activist journalist Ben Radford's article on how the Iran war shows we urgently need transition to renewables. And he suggests a better plan. Radford talks about introducing a 50% tax on gas exporters, which currently pay less tax than people do on beer and HECS student debt repayments. We could raise about $34 billion each year. So these gas exporters made more than $100 billion in windfall profits between 2022 and 2024 while paying barely any tax. And now, because of the war in Iran, the gas industry is making even more super profits. And If we think back to 2010, the then Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, do you remember how he proposed a 40% resource super profits tax on non-renewable resources, including gas? And that was aiming to target high profits from mining booms. But this was still an inadequate and very mild reform. But we remember what happened to him, because sometimes an elected government goes too far against the interests of the capitalist class, and a way is found to unelect them through some form of coup. And we saw Gina Reinhart and her billionaire gang, how they reacted. So it shows the enormous power of these giant monopolies in our capitalist society, and how the state can serve them at the expense of the public they claim to serve. And what we were talking to Sue Bolton before about, you know, needing to build a movement and demand the breaking of all ties with Israel's killing machine. But just, you know, going back to the renewables, Green Left, for more than three decades, Green Left has been championing the need for a renewables transition, paid for those most responsible for causing climate change, rich fossil fuel companies and governments beholden to them. So we don't accept oil-soaked corporate donations or advertising, which means we rely on people power to survive. So please consider becoming a supporter for as little as $5 a month and donating to our 2026 Fighting Fund. You can head to greenleft.org.au. But whether or not you can help financially, we really urge people to actually become active in building the socialist movement and campaigns, building an anti-capitalist political alternative with us. Because we are eco-socialism, we are eco-socialists, and we are for eco-socialism. And what does that mean? We mean that an ecologically socially just world is impossible under capitalism. So our goal is an eco-socialist world run by and for people.
Yeah. Well, I just want to kind of echo off kind of Chloe's comments. I mean, Green Left very much exists to help build the movements of kind of resistance. And probably one of the incredible things about Green Left is about how long it's been around. I mean, it's been around for more than 35 years. And in those years, it has consistently covered any struggle and campaign against injustice that is caused directly by the capitalist system, and has always unashamedly advocated for an eco-socialist kind of transformation of society. But it recognizes that the only way we're going to get there is through the bringing together of different social movements, you know, all the struggles of oppression from opposing racism, opposing militarism or war, standing up for workers' rights, and militant, active kind of mass resistance to the status quo. But yeah, I think that's one of the many reasons why you should support Green Left. And you can become a financial supporter for as little as $5 or $10 a month. Okay, maybe we'll play a quick announcement and then we'll go on to the Green Left Activist Calendar. You're listening to Green Left Radio.
The revolution in Rojava is a beacon of hope for the world, putting direct democracy and feminism into practice on a broad scale. This radical attempt at social transformation now faces huge challenges, including daily attacks by the Turkish military with little outside recognition or aid. Show your support for Rojava by joining North East Syria Solidarity, or NESS, and help ensure the survival of this inspiring experiment in social change. NESS sends aid, raises awareness, and builds solidarity. Get involved at www.nesssolidarity.org.au. NESS is a 3CR supporter.
All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. So just to inform listeners about what's kind of coming up in terms of events. So there'll be a film screening tonight at 6:30 PM at the Cinema Nova. As far as I know, it's a screening organised by Free Palestine Melbourne. And currently there's still tickets left. But basically, it's a screening of a documentary about the imprisoned Palestinian political leader Marwan Barghouti over a 5-year period. Marwan Barghouti has been described as Palestine's Nelson Mandela, and April will mark 24 years since he was unjustly imprisoned. This screening is part of a broader campaign to free Marwan Barghouti, which you can support by going on the Free Palestine Melbourne website. On Saturday, April the 18th, there's going to be a No More Rally Against Violence, Stop Violence Against Women at 11 AM at the State Library in the city. We actually did an interview last week with Sarah Williams, who's the CEO of the organization that has called that rally. It's part of a nationwide kind of rally against rallies against violence against women, which is actually happening all over the country. Then there will be the Socialist Alliance State Conference, Building Resistance to Imperialism and the Far Right. It is normally, the first half of the conference is for members only, but from 1 PM to 5:30 PM, there'll be a number of public sessions, including discussions on imperialism, imposing the far right, and building the socialist movement. And that will be happening at 251 Queensberry Street in Carlton, so at the AMWU office. Then on Sunday, April the 19th, there'll be a rally and the US-Israel war on the Middle East on Palestine Prisoners' Day, and they'll be at 12 noon at the State Library. Then on Monday, April the 20th, there'll be a public forum, Why We Must Say No to Islamophobia and Welcome All Refugees. They'll be happening at 6:30 PM at the Kathleen Syme Library and Community Centre. On the 28th of April, there'll be a public forum on building solidarity with Cuba, opposing the blockade, and that'll be happening on Tuesday the 28th of April, 6:30 p.m. at the Resistance Centre, Level 5, 407 Swanson Street. And it'll be featuring, it's been organised by Socialist Alliance and Green Left. Yeah, those are some of the kind of activists coming up. And also, I just want to note that the Eco-Socialism Conference this year, Resistance, Decolonisation and Liberation, will be at the Albion Peace Centre in Brisbane. So, yeah, we're just going to float that they'll be happening from Friday, September 11 to Sunday, September the 13th.
All right, we're going to go to a quick break, but stay tuned because we are going to be joined shortly by Fatima Yazbek, who is a human rights advocate and a member of the Gulf Institute for Democracy and Human Rights, and also from the Lebanese community. So we're looking forward to interviewing her shortly.
The state Labor government has begun works on demolishing Melbourne's 44 public housing towers to be replaced with private housing. Already, hundreds of residents have been displaced, often into unsuitable homes under duress.
The towers on Racecourse Road, Flemington, have become Homes Victoria work sites, while the families still living in the buildings are being treated appallingly.
Join Save Public Housing supporters in solidarity with residents.
Weekdays 7:30 till 9 a.m. as we engage with passing traffic to make some noise and show Jacinta Allen
that the demolition of public housing is unacceptable. Signs and banners provided or bring your own.
There's power in numbers, so see you at 120 Racecourse Road, Flemington, 7:30 till 9 a.m.
Save Public Housing is a 3CR supporter.
Being a 3CR subscriber is vitally important to keeping us community controlled, grassroots and on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
Every 3CR show is a progressive voice that enriches and informs our communities.
From gardening and music to current affairs and First Nations voices, we broadcast expert community knowledge, offering perspectives beyond the mainstream media.
Subscribe today to be part of community-owned and community-controlled media.
Show your solidarity. Subscribe.
Go to 3cr.org.au or call 9419 8377.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
Always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out to sham contracting arrangements.
On 8:55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au.
We have a right to be in public space, undertaking political activity. That is not something that people should be telling us that we can't do.
Multiple actions rolling over months and years and create huge sustained pressure of social change.
And what we're seeing around the country right now is increasing repression of protest.
Protest works. That's why I think we're seeing it criminalised all over the place.
3CR. Stay tuned. Stay radical.
We'll be right back.
You're back listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, and we did what we actually forgot to mention, a snap rally that's happening this Saturday. Say no to trans exclusionary red femmes, rad femmes. It's going to be at 4 p.m. tomorrow, Saturday, the 18th of April, outside the Supreme Court on Lonsdale Street. Protest against the lesbian action group's Supreme Court case. And thank you, comrades at 3CR Studio, for reminding us of that one. All right, we've got on the line for you, Fatima Yazbeg. Are you there, Fatima?
Yes, I am.
Good morning. Let me introduce you to listeners. Fatima is a human rights advocate and member of the Gulf Institute for Democracy and Human Rights, and also from the Lebanese community. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Chloe.
So, Fatima, just firstly, can you please address the negotiations between Lebanon and Israel at this point, and also this 10-day ceasefire?
Yeah, to begin with the negotiations, the vast majority of the Lebanese people reject these negotiations because when we talk about these negotiations between Lebanon and Israel, we have to start with a basic reality that you cannot negotiate under bombardment. Lebanon is being asked to sit at the table while its villages and cities are destroyed, its people displaced, and its land occupied. That is not diplomacy. That is pressure dressed up as dialogue. While Israel is committing another genocide, same to what it did in Gaza, in Lebanon. And the other problem is that the current Lebanese authority lacks legitimacy because it has repeatedly acted in ways that undermine coexistence among the Lebanese communities. And that is a breach of the Lebanese constitution. Instead of uniting the country in the face of the aggression and the ongoing war, it has aligned itself with foreign agendas, distanced itself from the suffering of the people who are under bombardment, and failed to defend the rights of all Lebanese equally. So this authority cannot protect its people. It cannot represent them in the negotiations. So when such a political class enters talks, it does so without a national mandate. It does not speak for the displaced families or the communities under fire or the people who believe Lebanon has the right to defend itself. It speaks from weakness and disconnection. Opposing these negotiations is not opposing peace, as they claim. It is opposing a process designed to strip Lebanon of its right to resist, to legitimize Israeli aggression, and to impose outcomes that Lebanese people never agreed to. Regarding the ceasefire, the 10-day ceasefire, the ceasefire has come into effect like just over an hour ago, but Israel has violated the ceasefire at least 8 times in this hour. It is still bombing the villages in South Lebanon, and the drones are still flying over the Lebanese villages and cities. So it didn't comply. It didn't abide, or it failed to meet its obligations once again after all the violations and that they did during the more than 15 months of putting the war on hold.
Yeah, thanks for that, Fatima. And it's Jacob here, who's one of the co-presenters. I want to kind of, the next question I kind of want to ask is that more than 1 million people have been told to evacuate South Lebanon by Israel, which has bombed it, killing and injuring many thousands. What can you tell us about the scale of the Israeli occupation of South Lebanon? And, you know, why, and do you think that Israel is trying to make a permanent land grab for southern Lebanon?
Yes, Israel has been trying to occupy all the south of the Litani River since 2024. They did succeed in occupying, they started with 5 points, and those increased to 17 points just before the restarting of the war, because the war didn't didn't actually like end between November 2024 and March 2026. It was still ongoing, but from one side. So they succeeded in occupying few points before March. From the beginning of March until today, they succeeded in occupying the very front line villages, a few villages there, because they are facing resistance in these villages, and they couldn't force the resistance to evacuate these villages. What is happening in southern Lebanon is not a borderline. It's not a border incident. They are trying to to do a large scale military occupation. Entire villages have been nearly emptied because some Lebanese people didn't agree to leave their villages. Homes, farms, and infrastructure have been destroyed. Roads and bridges are unusable. Yesterday, they destroyed the last bridge that connect southern of the Litani River to the rest of Lebanon. So it's now nearly isolated from the rest of Lebanon. Large areas are now uninhabitable because of the unexploded ordnance and constant bombardment. So when you push people out, destroy their homes, and then talk about security zones or buffer areas, it starts to look very much like a land grab. Israel occupied southern Lebanon for decades until 2000, when they were forced to leave, to evacuate. And there is a clear historical precedent here. Do I think Israel is trying to make a permanent land grab? At the very least, it is trying to create a new reality on the ground, a depopulated, militarized strip that serves its security doctrine, regardless of the Lebanese sovereignty. Whether they call it a buffer zone or something else, the effect is the same. Lebanese land and Lebanese lives are treated as expendable. Why is this? Because, why do I believe they are trying to land grab? Because Netanyahu revealed his plan and map of a greater Israel, and he's indeed going through that path.
Some people say that one of the reasons for Israel bombing Christian villages and other villages which are not connected to Hezbollah is that Israel is trying to make people scared of taking in refugees from southern Lebanon and trying to create sectarian violence and division in Lebanon. Fatima, what is your view? What is the situation for refugees from southern Lebanon when they seek refuge in other parts of Lebanon?
Yes, what you mentioned is correct, and I just want to mention one thing, is that the refugees aren't only from southern Lebanon. They are from the southern suburbs of Beirut and from some villages in the Bekaa region. So, bombing these villages that you mentioned, it completely exposes the false narrative that this is a war not against Lebanon, it's only against Hezbollah. So when they target communities that have no military presence, they are sending a message to all the Lebanese that no one is safe. One very plausible interpretation is that Israel is trying to engineer sectarian tension because that helps them to implement their plan. By bombing Christian villages, it fuels resentment. So why are we suffering for a war that we didn't choose or we don't agree with? That anger can easily be redirected toward displaced people or toward the Shia communities in Lebanon in specific, or toward the idea of resistance itself. It's a classic divide and rule strategy. As for refugees, their situation is extremely difficult because they had to flee to areas already struggling economically. The rents are skyrocketing at this point. Schools and hospitals are overwhelmed. Some host communities feel abandoned by the state and they resent the pressure. Others welcome the displaced people, but they lack the resources. So when Israel bombs the very areas receiving refugees, or when political actors try to blame the displaced families for instability, because it happened like in a few areas where there is political disagreement between the people who lives in these areas and the displaced people. So this deepens the risk of internal conflict and makes displacement a weapon, not just against the South, but against the Lebanese community.
So Fatima, what can you say? Can you comment a bit on the historic relationship between Hezbollah and Iran and the war unleashed by the US in Israel? If time, you can also comment on Hezbollah's leadership and its relationship to the state of Lebanon.
Okay, so to clarify one very clear reality that Hezbollah was formed after the Israeli invasion in 1982. So Hezbollah was formed as a result for the invasion. If Israel didn't invade Lebanon, there wouldn't be Hezbollah. So their origins are rooted in Lebanese resistance to Israeli occupation. Iran supported Hezbollah, yes, but Iran didn't invent the grievances. Those came from decades of invasion, bombing, and humiliation. Hezbollah emerged because the Lebanese state was unable or not allowed to defend its own territory. The U.S. and Israel framed this as an Iranian proxy war, but the framing erases the central fact that Lebanon was occupied and resistance grew from that reality. The current war is being justified in the language of security and deterrence, but in practice it is an attempt to weaken Hezbollah and to reassert the U.S.-Israeli dominance in the region. As for Hezbollah's leadership and its relationship with the Lebanese state, it is a bit complex because Hezbollah is not only one wing. It is both a resistance movement and a major political actor, and it represents a good chunk of the Lebanese population. It has ministers, social institutions, schools, hospitals and medical facilities, and a large support base. Independent military capacity creates tension with the idea of a unified state monopoly on force, but that tension exists only because the state has repeatedly failed to protect its people. If Lebanon had been able to defend its territory, Hezbollah wouldn't have had the same space to grow as an armed resistance, and the international system's failure to protect Lebanon repeatedly created the conditions for Hezbollah's role. So there were international resolutions have been issued against Israel since 1978, so like years before Hezbollah was formed. There were resolution 425 and 426. Were these resolutions implemented, or did Israel abide by these resolutions? No. So, yeah.
Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has still said nothing about these war crimes, and the Foreign Minister Penny Wong is blaming Iran, even after Trump's blasting on April 7th, saying that a whole civilization will die tonight, terrifying many into believing that we are on the brink of World War III or even a nuclear attack. Fatima, what do you think we should be demanding of the Albanese Labor government right now?
The silence of the Prime Minister on clear war crimes and the decision by the Foreign Minister Penny Wong to focus the blame on Iran while downplaying the Israeli aggression is morally indefensible. It sends a message that some lives matter less than others and that some states are effectively above international law. As for Trump's statement on April 7th, a whole civilization will die tonight, it terrified people around the world. In that moment, Australia should have stood firmly for de-escalation and international law. Instead, the government chose caution towards Washington and indulgence toward Israel. So what should we demand of the Albanese government right now? First, a clear public call for an immediate ceasefire and an end to Israel's invasion and bombardment of Lebanon. Not a vague language about this de-escalation, but a direct condemnation of attacks on civilians and occupation of Lebanese territory. Two, the suspension of all military cooperation, arms sales, and intelligence sharing that could support or enable Israeli operations. Three, strong support for international investigations into war crimes and crimes against the humanity, including at ICC, without double standards. And the last point is we should demand that Australia stop echoing U.S. talking points that reduce everything to Iranian aggression and instead recognize the core issue, the rights of peoples under occupation and bombardment to resist, and the obligation of states like Australia to stand with international law, not with impunity.
All right. Just want to see if you have any kind of, I think this has been a very good interview, Fatima, and I guess, do you have any final comments that you'd like to make before we finish up the interview?
Yes, I just think that there is one final point that I think it's essential. Lebanon today is facing an attempt to redefine its identity, its borders, and its political future through force. What is happening is not a temporary escalation. It is a decisive moment that will shape the future of Lebanon, the future of the state, and the future of coexistence among Lebanese communities. Lebanese people deserve a political leadership that stands with them, not above them, that defends their unity, not undermines it, and that refuses to trade away their rights under the pressure of foreign powers. Finally, I would like to address the international community. If it truly wants stability, then it must address the root causes, occupation, aggression, and the systematic violation of Lebanese sovereignty. Peace cannot be built on the ruins of villages or on the displacement of entire communities. Peace begins with justice, and justice begins with ending the aggression.
Well, we really appreciate your time today, Fatima. If listeners are just tuning in, we are speaking to Fatima Yazbek, who is a human rights advocate and member of the Gulf Institute for Democracy and Human Rights, and also part of the Lebanese community. Thank you, Fatima. It's been really great talking to you, and we also would like to extend our solidarity with you and the Lebanese people and the community here too.
Thank you very much for having me.
See you later.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks again, Fatima.
Bye.
You know, there's people, like you said, have been on casual for 7 years. Well, it's supposed to be casual employment. People want full-time jobs. They don't want to be sitting there casual, not knowing they're going to get any days, any leave or whatsoever. Especially, you look at all the casuals in our industry at the moment, they're sitting home. You know, people want full-time employment and they should be entitled to employment.
And look at all the people who were used and abused as casuals in the aged care sector and all the problems that are facing people now and all the deaths that are following.
In the meatworks, a lot of that's casuals, labour hire, you know, you've got blokes travelling around, you know. We want full-time positions and, you know, and people want it. We want to be full-time employed. You want to have your Christmas holidays. You want to have time with your family. But when you're a casual, you get none of that.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio 855 AM on digital and online. 3CR Radical Radio.
We are coming to the end of the Green Left Radio show, and we want to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in this week. We want to thank our guests, Fatima Yazbek, Ash White, and Sue Bolton, for joining us on the program. And we want to remind listeners to keep building the movement, keep demanding the breaking of all ties with Israel's killing machine, demand the break of AUKUS War Alliance deal. And we need to be redirecting all of that money to deliver serious assistance to those struggling to make ends meet with the rising fuel and inflation. As a result of these illegal wars, the billions should be directed to those needing welfare, health services, housing and public support.
Yeah, and thanks again for our listeners. And stay tuned for Left After Breakfast. And come listen to us next Friday from 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m. on Green Left Radio.
This brings us to the end of the show. You have been listening to Friday Morning Breakfast with Green Left Radio, brought to you by Green Left Weekly Newspaper, which brings an alternative source of information that puts people and planet before profit.
If you like our work, become a supporter from $5 per month at...
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.